Our next speaker is Mr. Mick Wallace.
Madness.
Madness.
This is madness.
We cannot fix a problem caused by capitalism with more capitalism.
They hurt the people.
I ended up at the end of a gun
on three occasions.
I done well to survive anyway.
Madame Deli will speak.
A union which allows fiscal rules to be broken for arms expenditure,
but not for housing or to put roofs over the heads of people.
This is evidence of police violence. Whether you're an economic migrant or you're an asylum seeker, nobody deserves to be treated like this.
And even having the neck to suggest separating people from their mothers. How dare you?
They don't need us to kick them around the place.
You could say it, so what?
It's a
police
joke.
In riot gear with Trump. I am ashamed to call myself a
the
European.
Recognition of Guaido,
unelected gobshite, is an absolute embarrassment.
Now, you did use the word gobshite, and so I would reprimand you over that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to I Foresee Trouble with Daly and Wallace. We're in Strasbourg in the studio today and in the middle of a plenary session. Whoopee. And we had a big vote today, Mick, didn't we, on the taxonomy? We've seen a bit of reporting on it already. It's an objection was tabled. You're one of the objectors to reject the Commission's plans to greenwash fossil gas and nuclear energy. So the idea is that in the sustainable finance framework, they would allow these energy sources to get a green categorisation. Now, this is something I've worked on for years because I was in the last mandate as well working on this. It's been a long story. But since December is when they published these new rules to complement the regulation. And it's been very controversial. And you've been working on it since then as well, Mick. Tell us what happened with the vote. And
yeah, I was surprised, to be honest. I thought we'd have won. But it just goes to show how much lobbying was done by vested interests. So we have nuclear and fossil gas being classified as being the same as renewable under this scheme, which means they will avail of cheap money to continue to do things that are environmentally unfriendly. And it's a bit shocking, but in one way, I really did think that enough of the middle ground would actually go the right way on it. But I probably I underestimated how much lobbying had been done. Mairead McGuinness, the Irish Commissioner, has obviously been heavily involved in this. And we got speaking time yesterday with her. I mean, she's been abysmal on it. Mm. I mean, she's been such a disappointment. And it's funny, but I mean, Claire will probably touch on it there because Claire raised an issue that was related to Ukraine that has interfered in the whole process. But I mean, I pointed out to the Commissioner at the end, I said, you know, she says that the position that they're taking, in other words, greenwashing fossil gas and nuclear, she has said the position they're taking is pragmatic for the uncertain times we're living in. So in some ways, they've actually used the war to undermine environmental ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's shocking. And I said to her, I said, you mightn't realise this, I said, but the war in Ukraine is not the biggest challenge to the planet today. Climate change is. And but do you know what? Truth be told, a lot of people are still in denial mm-hmm. on climate change.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid, but the Commissioner McGuinness is one of them.
Well, she was leading the charge on it. I mean, for me, I suppose, I kind of feel embarrassed at myself that I actually believed that the Parliament would stick to its guns, because we've covered this issue on the last couple of podcasts, but people should register that the Parliament's Econ and Envy Committee have already voted on this matter and decided that actually nuclear and gas should not be included in the taxonomy. So what we had today was a reversal of the Parliament's already position. And I think Mick is right, like the reason that happened has been because of absolutely massive lobbying which has gone on in the meantime on behalf of vested interests. So what we saw was this week revealed is the processes that go on in the European Union all the time. On the one hand, we had young people gathering here during the week being prevented from getting near the Parliament, but trying, they were swimming in the water. Some of them came into the chamber with T-shirts to try and get the right thing done. And then you had actually the lobbyists getting the ear of the politicians. It's absolutely disgusting, and getting them to reverse the principled stand, the scientific-based stance they took to defend the parliament. It's actually scary. Mm. And the clincher argument, and the thing that I found the most offensive, is this parliament is dominated by foreign interference. And foreign interference dictated this vote, because we had everybody using the war to carry this issue. Pathetic. The people who wanted to keep nuclear and gas out were saying, oh, don't do this because you'll be boosting Putin's gas in Russia if you include gas in the taxonomy. And they were using a quote of some Russian energy minister or somebody saying, oh, this would be great if Europe includes this in taxonomy and all this. And that was an argument being used. Don't vote for this because it'll help Putin. That has absolutely nothing got to do with the scientific evidence based around this issue. But the clincher came then, and I am absolutely convinced that the commission ordered this at the 11th hour because they were getting desperate, because the mood was different. It looked like the parliament would reject this because we already had. And at lunchtime yesterday, we get a letter from the Ukrainian government telling us that if we want to stand with Ukraine, we should include nuclear and gas in it. And then it went on to a 3-page spread of how this was a great opportunity to divest ourselves from Russian gas and we could invest in Ukrainian gas. And as I said, listen, lads, you know, this is a scientific argument about the planet, and the planet isn't going to distinguish whether the gas is Ukrainian or Russian. This is foreign interference, and it looks like it clinched the deal. And I'd say the commission asked the Ukrainians to send that. And they got their way.
And if they didn't, it was completely shameless that that's the line they went on at the last minute to try and swing the vote. Mairead McInnes was draped in the Ukrainian flag colours and coming out with these lines to, at the very last minute there, the Ukrainians want us to keep this delegated act, so if you object, you're against the Ukrainians. That was basically the line.
She was a disgrace yesterday. Yeah. I was shocked at her. Right? You know what? I mean, I've actually gone okay with Mairead over the years, right? But she has been a disgrace in the last couple of months. And yesterday was the last straw. I cannot believe how poorly she has carried herself. I cannot believe how badly she's behaved.
It was dressed up as if, you know, a sort of thing, but this is a sellout, and they can dress it up as they like, but that's what it was. I think the young people saw that. It's gut-wrenching. But like, is this what the European Union has become now? We do whatever the US tell us in terms of foreign policy, and now in terms of our environmental policy and our decisions that we should make in the interest of the climate are being debased somehow and confused and misrepresented in the context of the war. And this is frightening stuff, particularly when we look at what's going on in the rest of Europe with the massive cost of living crisis, for example, which we discussed here today. Another consequence of the war in part.
And like, the consequences of this vote are pretty we're going to be long lasting. Like, this is the EU taxonomy on sustainable finance, which is going to be with us for years now, telling us what's sustainable and what's not. So now it's been completely discredited. We have the first time we're going to have green bonds with nuclear and gas and assets in it, which is just ludicrous. The investor community, all these asset owners, are all saying that this is not a good sign to the market. It doesn't make any sense by international standards. And now we're going to be dealing with this all the time about taxonomy alignment. And every time we see this, it's actually going to be a greenwashing tool rather than what it was supposed to be, was to stop greenwashing, to be able to let us distinguish what's sustainable, what's not. So we've really fucked things up for a long time with this vote. And it's really shameful. Like, the vote went pretty bad. Like, we thought that there'd be a closer vote than it was, but there was 278 members in favour, 328 against, and 33 abstained, and there was around 70 who didn't even turn up. So it's really, really sad that the last turning point was this geopolitical push to really politicise the whole thing, which is supposed to be based on science. It's supposed to be telling us what's environmentally sustainable by scientific evidence and data, and instead we got these lame arguments, not even at all backed up by anything, and that swings the vote.
Well, it's a terrible reflection on the European Parliament. We have 705 MEPs, 278 vote for the environment today out of 705. What in God's name?
Which includes all the Fine Gael MEPs voting.
What has happened
against
to the European Union?
And we should remember that, like we've often said about the democratic deficit, how the European Parliament has very limited influence over policy making in a general sense, this was one of the few areas where the Parliament could have stamped its mark because we have that blocking facility. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do it.
And it needs to be said as well, because the Irish government had so many opportunities to do something in the council. We heard the Germans actually stand up against this delegated act. The Luxembourgish, the Austrians, they're all saying that they're going to go to court now over this. They're making big statements and they're saying no. Irish government hasn't done a toss on this. And the Greens are in government. Renew, Fianna Fáil are split on it. So what the hell are they doing? Just being completely quiet. And yeah, this is the result, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the media will be interviewing, you know, some of the Green MEPs out here, and they'll be giving out about it. But yet there are parties and governments at home and doing nothing about it. I mean, what's going on?
Well, not only that, but they're mis-selling it at home as well. They're selling a lie. I mean, you caught out Fianna Fáil very well on the RTE programme this week, Mick. Billy Kelleher claiming that this was going to benefit LNG and that. And Mora, yeah, that there's an Irish
angle. As if that'd be good for the climate.
We're not in favour of LNG anyway, like, and that's bad enough. But what he was saying wasn't even true, like, because this has been a deal stitched up for France to get money to repair its nuclear industry and so on. But Ireland couldn't even. So instead you have the Irish government reps pretending it's about something that might impact on Ireland, which it won't, and which would be bad for the environment anyway. And then they don't open their mouth.
Well, you shouldn't underestimate the possibility that the Irish government's silence is not linked to the fact that we're going to buy nuclear manufactured electricity from France. We're putting in a cable now in the sea to take electricity from France, which is from the nuclear plants. This same nuclear, 50% of the uranium that makes the French electricity comes from Niger, where a war has been going on since 2013 when the French troops moved down there with troops from all over Europe as well. None of them should have been there. It was colonialism, 100%. Mm-hmm. Literally, imposing themselves on it. But it should be remembered that when the Irish a delegation from the Irish government went to the Sahel region where Niger is and Mali, went there three summers ago, and before we know it, we were actually putting some troops ourselves into the Sahel region. Why? At the same time, the deal was being done with France. On important electricity from France that's nuclear based, and here we are now staying silent on France getting an opportunity to get free money interest-free money from the likes of the European Investment Bank because nuclear is green today after today's vote.
Well, it was pathetic, and I mean, you're right, like Mairead McGuinness was pathetic. She was saying, I mean, who would have thought it that Germany and other countries are back burning coal? Nobody wants to go there, but this is happening because of the war. And we're going, sorry now, this is happening because ye are sanctioning the use of Russian gas, like, you know, so sorry now, but you can't have your cake and eat it. But I mean, this is how they use everything now. The war has been used as an excuse to hide everything, and we have, of course, ordinary people being the victims of that with the mass of cost of living crisis now.
Let's talk a bit about that, because there was also debate in the Parliament this week on that, Mick, on the cost of living.
Yeah, it is dramatic for so many people across Europe. Inflation is running at 8.3% at the moment. It'll probably be 10% before the year's out. And living costs are going through the roof, and people are not getting the assistance that they need to deal with it. And there's been there's strikes in France, Belgium and Italy and Britain a lot. Not so sure, but there hasn't been that many in Ireland of yet. But there's a huge clamour for wages to match inflation. And there's no logic as to why they shouldn't. In Britain, for example, they're talking about giving 3% increases to benefits and that kind of thing and to wages in the state sector. 3% against an inflation rate. The Brits have an inflation rate now of 9%. So that's a 6% cut to wages in Britain. Let's see what's going to happen in Ireland, because it'll be very similar. There's no effort in Ireland to cap fuel prices. They don't want to upset big business, financial vested interests. They don't want to upset them. In fairness to the French, where inflation is only 2/3 of the inflation in Ireland, they've capped energy increases. Mm-hmm. The cost of electricity in Ireland has increased by 40% since Christmas. The cost in France is less than increase is less than 10%. Which country has been run better?
Yeah. I mean, and Ireland's going up again. Like, they've announced they're going up again.
It's blatant, right? Mm. I mean, God, we are such a badly run country. It is shocking.
This is going to kill people in Ireland. There's no doubt about it. Like, it's getting into scary territory with the scale of the price rises in terms of energy in particular. But also as winter approaches, because of the nature of our climate, and the government are just sitting there, and Micheál Martin's out in Ukraine visiting Zelensky at his invitation. I mean, it's beyond pathetic. Like, this fella is obviously waddling around now looking for a job in Europe of some sort. He thinks he's some sort of a, I don't know what, statesman. But my God, I tell you, De Valera be turning his grave with the carry on of him. I mean, the prostitution of him at the NATO summit, for example.
I mean, it must be some hard for a genuine traditional Fianna Fáiler like Éamon O'Keefe to actually have to watch what Micheál Martin has got up to in the last few months. He is promoting the war in Ukraine.
Big time.
And the war, I mean, the amount of element in the European Union that has promoted this war from the start and done nothing to get anyone to the negotiating table, to engage in any diplomacy, is really unprecedented. Mm. I've never seen it quite like it before. We're promoting a war, and we've introduced sanctions that are crippling us. They are not crippling Putin and his oligarchs. They are crippling the citizens of Europe. I'm sure they're crippling the less well off in Russia too. But I mean, this is just a total disaster. We literally have a war today between, I described it earlier in the week, where there's a monopoly capitalism at play in Russia and in America. This today now is a US-NATO proxy war against Russia being fought in Ukraine, and the only people dying are working class people. Working class people are dying, and games are being played with their lives, right? No one, they pretend to care about Ukraine. They don't care how many Ukrainians die, because if they did, they'd have been working for peace before now. So, but to get back to the cost of living dimension of it, if we want to deal with the cost of living problem today, and it was rising before the war because of the impact of the pandemic, and actually the impact goes right back to how they dealt with the crisis in 2008 anyway. But we haven't time to get into all that today. I think we should do a good section on it someday soon to explain it. But right now, we have the European Union imposing sanctions that are rising the cost of food and fuel all across Europe. Right, the rising cost of food will drive millions into starvation in the global south. But you know what? We are in denial. I had a ferocious argument with Mairead McGuinness at an econ committee. She said the sanctions have nothing to do with the rising cost of living. It's the war. I mean, is she brain dead? Of course the war is relevant. And of course the war is terrible and it's illegal, and Putin is a right bollocks to have invaded Ukraine in the first place. He's just, as we keep describing him, as a right-wing neoliberal nationalist, and we have no time for him. But you know what? The Europeans have introduced sanctions that are crippling their own citizens at the behest of US NATO. It's a disgrace.
But you're totally right as well, and it touches on a point that we made last week, to use Julian Assange's words in relation to Afghanistan. The goal is not a victorious war, it is an endless war. And that is an agenda being pushed by NATO and the US, but it's absolutely criminal that the EU establishment have rolled in behind it, because it's the people of Europe Russia, Ukraine primarily, but also ordinary European citizens who are paying the price. And you're totally right. This war now is an excuse for everything, because you touched on a very important point, that the roots of this crisis economically in terms of the cost of living started before the war. But now they're hiding behind that and pretending to people it's not a consequence of their decisions. It's all the war. We see vested interests in the fossil fuel industry who wanted to undermine what was necessary to do to save the planet, getting away with it now, but it's all because we're involved in a war. This is like a wet dream, like, to these warmongers. It can justify absolutely anything now, and that is utterly frightening that we don't have an independent media prepared to scrutinise that, call it out for what it is, and have a balanced, rational discussion. And I think we touched off it before, but like, this idea that anything can be sort of debate on everything can be shut down with the one-liner, well, it's because of the war, or, well, we have to stand with Ukraine, is scary. I mean, we see developments now. I think we mentioned last week about the Italian media being investigated because they had some Russian journalists on their programme to be scrutinised. And the Russian, or the Italian government then was shocked because most Italians want peace. But we see a reporter in Germany being threatened with imprisonment. We see in Latvia, our colleague here in the European Parliament, being denied participation in a big party leaders debate because she's against the war. We've seen people being arrested in Latvia because they're arguing for peace and not towing the government line. So what we have is a European establishment who say they're in a war between democracy and authoritarianism, but adapting authoritarian methods to shut down debate and dissent. And we don't have a critical media calling that out. Actually, the media are in the front line peddling this absolute nonsense. So it's really frightening, actually, in terms of long-term consequences.
The people at home would be aware of a lot of the shite in the Irish Times and Irish Examiner in particular. In their attacks on us, literally using the fact that we have refused to promote the war, using the fact that we're calling for peace, and they are literally rewriting the story to suit an agenda that they're bringing to the equation. It is shocking. And it would really make you wonder about the standard of media in Ireland. I mean, it's really problematic that we seem to have lost any semblance of independent media. They just seem so wedded to the US NATO imperialist line that you wonder, how did it get to this part?
I think it's not just in Ireland, and I think they're obsession with disinformation and alleged foreign interference is actually because they themselves have lost the battle for the hearts and minds of ordinary people. And rather than accepting their failure and correcting their actions, as you would actually do if you really lived in a democracy, instead of that, they're looking to blame somebody else. So it's not that the people of Europe have actually decided, you know what, there's nothing in it for this war. It'd be better off if there was peace and we all sat down and got on with each other. No, that's not a sensible, thought out attitude by the European public that its leaders should listen to. No, they're the victims of Russian interference. And one of the sinister things mentioned in our committee was that it's not just the foreign interference that they talk about, because we've made the point to them, and we did at a recent meeting, was saying, you're going on about all this Russian interference, but clearly isn't working, because practically everybody in Europe stands with the people of Ukraine and doesn't want the war to be happening. So if they're getting all this foreign interference, they're obviously not doing great on it. But they said, yes, but it's not just the foreign interference. What makes the difference is when there are domestic enablers. So when there are people in their own country amplifying that Russian message, and they may be doing it for money, or they may be just idiots, and, you know, they kind of look over at us. But whatever reason they're doing it, they're the ones who are responsible. I'm going, for feck's sake, here we are now. Here it goes. But this has been peddled across Europe. But then we know, because of the audience and the people that we get, and the reach that we have here is that most people across Europe don't buy into that. And it's not that they're puppets, so that they're just trying to grapple with the issues and come up with a sensible solution that everybody can live with to end this terrible war so that we can get on with it and try and tackle the biggest battles of, for the climate and all the rest. But there are big vested interests calling the shots, dominating the media, and actually that's the battle that's there to be played.
And it should be just mentioned that the European Council on Foreign Relations carried out an intensive survey on this, and they were putting the option to the people that they were polling, and it was a very wide-scale polling across 10 countries in Europe, and they put the option to them, would you prefer peace or would you rather punish Russia? And peace came out on top by over 2-1. But you wouldn't think that from the political establishment in the member states. You wouldn't think that listening to Micheál Martin. You wouldn't think that listening to von der Leyen in the European Union. And one more example of how out of touch our political leaders are with the general public.
Let's go back also to this thing on the NATO summit that just happened. And also we had the G7 just before that. And this kind of disconnect reminds me of this, what the outcome of these two summits was. NATO declared China a security challenge for the first time.
Oh, God.
And China this, China that, G7, China, yeah. China, G7. It's like, are they living in a completely different reality? Like, there's a cost of living crisis, climate crisis, biodiversity crisis. People are, there's a war in Europe, like, seriously, and that's what came out of it.
But if you're NATO and you've rescued yourself from obscurity based on fostering division in Ukraine, and you see how well that's doing for your friends in the arms industry, it's working, and you've bought, the whole of Europe has bought the crap, then you turn around and you say, let's move on to the next target, and it's China. You know?
Yeah, just to remind people, NATO, N-A-T-O, is the North Atlantic Trade Treaty Organization, and it involves the US, and it started in 1949, and it was a reaction to fight communism in Russia after the Second World War. And but then in 1991, when the Soviet bloc was dissolved and broken up, NATO didn't disappear. But today, NATO exists to actually protect US hegemony, to protect the role that US imperialism has been playing for a couple of hundred years now. But that's NATO's raison d'etre. But sadly, think about the name again, North Atlantic. North Atlantic Treaty Organization, right? Now they're getting interested in China.
Yeah.
Now they're bringing Japan and Australia, New Zealand and South Korea in as partners. A little subsection.
They attended the summit.
A little subsection, right? Yeah. And actually they were invited to the summit in Madrid. I believe Micheál Martin was out there, even though the Irish people don't want anything to do with NATO, but Micheál Martin does. Sadly, he was allowed to attend. But we have now all of a sudden they're worried about China. China, they said, is a threat to our security in Europe and America. Now, China's a long way from here. China haven't dropped a bomb on anyone in 40 years. China have no warships in the Mediterranean or in the Atlantic. But the Americans and European member states have warships in the South China Sea. Now, I mean, it's not rocket science. Who's the aggressor? Who's interfering in whose front yard? Is it the Americans interfering in the Chinese front yard, or is it the Chinese interfering in America's front yard? Come on. This is unbelievable. And the fact that the EU is increasingly linking itself to the NATO agenda, the US agenda, we have become a vassal state of US-NATO imperialism. We have become a vassal state, in particular led by von der Leyen.
Mm-hmm. We're
in a bad place. And the citizens of Europe need to wake up, and the citizens of Ireland need to wake up to the fact that the European Union that we've always wanted to work and that we've always wanted to be part of is under serious threat of being just hijacked by militarism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, because people should remind themselves that it wasn't always so. I mean, we had an interesting discussion on Monday night here on the Indo-Pacific report and a report on EU-India relations. And while we voted against those reports, it was interesting that the rapporteurs on it actually put forward a more balanced position on China than you would hear from NATO, and you would hear from some people in the European Parliament who have been ratcheting up the anti-China rhetoric, and we often get that here. But actually, the rapporteurs on the files were much more moderate, seeing the importance of China as a trading partner, recognising the need to work on dialogue and trade and investment and cooperation rather than on division. And the commissioner, actually, who responded to that debate, was very moderate in her tone as well, which kind of shows you in some ways that there is a battle going on in Europe. It's a battle that's been lost in terms of Ukraine, that the more sensible voices who would argue for a negotiated settlement have been frightened into silence, a lot of them, that it's not even, and that would be even amongst some capitalists in Europe who it's demonstrably not in their interests to have the sanctions and the war. But it's the same with China. People who see that actually it's in Europe's economic interest to have a good, healthy relationship with China, who are our biggest trading partners. So maybe there's a little bit of hope in that, but it gives you an insight into the battle that's going on. But there are very serious vested interests at stake here who are ratcheting that up, and they have some willing helpers here. So, like, Taiwan is the target now. So we'll all ratchet it up in Taiwan and use that against China the way they ratcheted up Ukraine with Russia, and they'd hope to see that keeping them occupied. But that is terrifying.
Well, my fear is that we talked about this same thing over 2 years ago.
Mm.
We're here 3 years now, over 3 years. And we were, about 2 years ago, we noticed the anti-Russian and anti-Chinese rhetoric ramping up. And we thought, you know what? When push comes to shove, German and French business will make the big calls. And we're not going to fall out with the Russians, and we're not going to fall out with the Chinese, because it will be a huge blow to capitalism, to industry, to money, to the ordinary people right across Europe, if we do that. But my fear is that they actually walked into it with Russia. They deliberately made no effort to stop the war. France and Germany made some effort, but it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And the US NATO agenda was paramount.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up finding ourselves promoting a position where we wouldn't oppose the idea of Ukraine becoming a part of NATO, which was a security concern for Russia, whether people like it or not. And we didn't go to that space, and we were weak, and we were literally, it was like as if we were just taking orders from the Americans. So we walked into it with Russia. We're seeing a huge blow to cost of living standards all across Europe. We know that it would be even more stupid to reach this point with China. But given that, I actually didn't think that we'd be so stupid to go to this place with Russia. I'm not so sure what's going to happen with China. I just find it mad.
Well, the lesson is the need for people to be active. And we've made the point, it's very difficult for the anti-war movement at the moment to kind of show itself, such as the scale of the propaganda at the moment. But I do think it'll be, if there's to be any hope out of this, it'll come from the struggles around the cost of living and people being forced to take action to say no more. We cannot go on. Your ideology and your propaganda and your sort of inter-imperialist rivalry is not going to happen at the expense of our living standards. And maybe people, you know, demanding a resolution around those issues is probably the only thing that can force a change of direction. And I mean, I suppose, you know, we have seen a change of direction. It happened quite quickly in a negative way. So presumably that can happen again in a positive way. And we've seen, as we talked about before, some changes, not maybe great on an international front, but, you know, in the war But the likes of the election of the, you know, the victory for the French left in the election, not outright victory, but the gains made and all the rest as well, that maybe out of some of those movements we get.
I mean, it might be simplifying things a bit, right? But I made the point in the Parliament this week that Russian economy, like the US economy, is dominated by monopoly capital, right? Both countries are run by oligarchs or big business, whatever you want to call them, right? So, but now we have a NATO-US proxy war in Ukraine against Russia. So we have two factions of capitalism, because Russia's another one, right? And we have, we're accused of being Russian puppets, right? We have never defended what's going on in Russia, because it's not good either, right? We criticise what's happening in America more openly because it's not done in the chamber that we're operating in. But we are equally critical of how Russia operates, right? But now we have these two factions of capitalist imperialism waging war on each other, right? And there's only working class people dying. Mm-hmm. But what's really soul destroying for me is that the European Union has bought into the US-NATO line without challenging it. We have not been looking for peace. We have not made the effort for diplomacy and negotiation. That is so soul destroying.
But look, it's the hypocrisy, and we saw in the chamber this week, I mean, we pointed out before all this nonsense about EU values and all of that, and then we look at their migration policy. We discussed the appalling massacre of refugees in Morocco funded by EU funds. We had a chance to discuss that in the plenary this week, and we had the horror of having to endure the Greek Prime Minister who was just an arrogant racist, really, in terms of his attitude. My God. But all of this is a consequence of the fact that the EU has outsourced its migration and legal obligation under international law to third countries like Turkey, like Morocco, who they give out about at other times. Yeah. But they're very happy to pay them to keep refugees out. And yet they say they're in a battle of authoritarianism against democracy. It's just blatant hypocrisy, the entire thing.
That's it. I think we'll finish up there. We'll catch up again next week. I think we're back in Brussels for our last episode for the summer.
Oh no.
I know.
Holidays, here we come.
But thanks for listening, and do drop us a message if you'd like us to talk about anything in particular, or give us a like and a share. And we'll be back next week.
We should add now that we're actually only really closed for 4 weeks.
I didn't say five.
No, I'm just saying, and I'd like to contrast that to the Dáil holidays. Uh-huh. We left a good job where you get 10 or 11 weeks for the summer holiday.
You chose it anyway, with less holidays. My goodness.
I know, yeah, but listen, we're suckers for punishment.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Good luck.
Okay, bye-bye.
Flá an a while, yeah.